The Christina Borgeson Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The U.S. likes to think of itself as an exceptional nation. And indeed, in one really awful way, it is. Only America has the bizarre, deadly problem of an epidemic level of killer kids responsible for school and other random mass shootings. And no one is really digging into why that is. Gun availability is not only not the whole story, but probably isn't even the main story. One inconvenient fact regarding guns is that overall gun violence in the U.S. plummeted nearly 50% between 1993 and 2000 and has pretty much remained the same since. And the first school shooter, Charles Whitman, known as the Texas Tower Sniper, killed 13 people and wounded 30 at the University of Texas in Austin way back in 1966. He was on Dexedrine for depression and severe headaches. So drugs are the hidden part of this story. In 2013, psychiatrist and pharmacologist Dr. David Healy made the alarming statement that, quote, some 90% of school shootings over more than a decade had been linked to a widely prescribed type of antidepressant called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs. You'd think that statistic would get some attention, but, and would generate action. Instead, the mental history of these murderous children are routinely suppressed. Right now, for example, have you heard anyone report on whether or not the Uvalde shooter, Salvador Rolando Ramos, was on any kind of drug, prescription or otherwise? Given Dr. Healy's statistic, you'd think people would want to know. Now, behind the sensational stories of killer kids is another big story of the wholesale drugging of children in schools, and even worse, for kids in foster homes, that some whistleblowers and researchers are characterizing as aggressive pathologizing of normal behavior in young children. They're being treated with drugs like Ritalin, a methylphenidate that's the chemical equivalent of cocaine. The DEA lists Ritalin as a Schedule II drug, the most addictive. Psychiatrist Peter Bragan says the use of these stimulant drugs to suppress hyperactivity in kids suppresses spontaneous behavior that manifests itself in a reduction of exploration, curiosity, socializing, and playing. Now, the immediate focus for trying to end once again this grotesque epidemic is again gun control. And behind that is also a frightening move towards taking the responsibility for children's mental health out of their parents' hands and putting it into the hands of public servants and institutions. And now, officials are trying to force COVID shots on kids when the science shows that not only do they not need them because COVID is not dangerous to them, but the shots can be dangerous for their health. So, yet another assault on children. So who's looking out for the kids? Who's asking the questions that no one will ask regarding these issues and actually taking action? My guest today, Sheila Matthews, is. Matthews is the founder of Able Child, a nationally recognized nonprofit parents' rights organization that she established in 2003, and it's dedicated to protecting full informed consent and the right to refuse psychiatric services. Able Child works to ensure that all child caregivers are provided with a safe haven, resources, and support network when faced with issues surrounding subjective psychiatric labels assigned and drug treatments prescribed to vulnerable American children. Welcome, Sheila.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Well, it's my pleasure, big time. I want to start by talking about the suppression of the men, because since, you know, the school shooters are very much, this latest Uvalde school shooting, which, you know, there's a very bizarre investigation underway. The suppression of mental health records, and in this case, it's the same thing. Now, you've actually worked on this, so could you just address that and what the problems are and why it's important?
Sure. My organization reached out to the Justice of the Peace in Texas, who is responsible for processing the shooter's body. And we did that because of past experience, and I'll get into that with other school shootings. But right away, the important thing was to isolate the toxicology report, because indeed that's the most significant piece of evidence regarding the shooting, the school shooting, to find out what drugs were in his body at the time of the tragic killings. So when I called over to the Justice of the Peace, he indicated to me that, number one, which was very, very alarming, that the body was taken to an undisclosed location in a different county due to security reasons. So that really set off a red flag for me. But the most
security
important thing
reasons.
I wanted,
why would there? What security reasons would be attached to that?
I'm not sure. He would not elaborate on it, and had requested that I put it in writing, which I have done, and I still have not received a response back. But he indicated it was for security purposes. Now, of course, the shooter is dead, so I can't imagine that somebody was trying to gain access to do harm to the body. But you know, it is a chain of custody issue for me. In when there's a police investigation, you want to make sure your chain of custody of the evidence is not tampered with. So, you know, it's not a bad thing that they wanted to do security measures, but to have it shipped to a different county and not disclose that county and not describe the security measures and the purpose of it is not very transparent. So that was one red flag. The other one was, I was told that the toxicology report would take 3 to 4 months. Which is unheard of. Basically, we have in America right now massive gun legislation happening in the wake of this tragic event, yet we have no evidence to indicate that it was the cause of the mass killing. The weapon doesn't pick up itself, and I think that argument's been made over and over and over again. It is really what the operator is doing. And so in any case, when I asked why it would take 3 to 4 months, I was told that it was due to COVID, which is kind of alarming based on the amount of children that were killed and the national level of security we're dealing with regarding these mass shootings, and our lawmakers jumping through the hoops to try to get laws passed to prevent it from happening again, and yet you don't have the toxicology report. Makes no sense. No sense.
Wow.
So that's what I've been working on with Texas, but my history of Able Child goes way back to working on several other school shootings. And my most significant work was done on Sandy Hook in Newtown, Connecticut. And I'm sure your audience has heard about that, because that was, you know, shook the world, that
yeah,
school
it sure
shooting.
Did.
So my organization actually was on the ground within the first week of the shooting. And the day of the events, my organization emailed to the governor of the state of Connecticut, plus the state police who was in charge of the investigation. We sent them all the school shootings that were linked to psychiatric drugs over the last 10 years. And we had it hopes that by giving this data to those who were in charge of the investigation, that they would get the toxicology report and make that a significant part of the investigation. And that was not done. We still don't know. Go ahead.
Why wasn't that done? And wasn't, Adam Lanza's father ever try and make an issue out of that?
No, his father did indicate that his son was on Lexapro. But because we don't have the actual toxicology report, we don't know what was tracing in his blood prior to the shooting. But Adam Lanza was treated with psychiatric drugs as early as he was like in the zero to birth program in mental health. And his mother made no bones about it. She was pro mental health. She did everything that the school had recommended to do for Adam Lanza. He was on the latest and greatest psychiatric drugs. And actually the police report indicated that he became resistant to the psychiatric drugs and was having side effects. And Nancy Lanza went to Yale Child Study Center, where he was being treated by a top doctor in the country, and complained about the side effects. And when she made that complaint, he basically told her she was non-compliant. And that was
non-compliant.
A huge
what does that mean? What does that mean?
Exactly. That means that she no longer wanted to give her son the medication that he was having severe side effects from, and they just labeled her in that document as being non-compliant.
So weird. My
organization went to the state attorney and said, look at this piece of evidence. She went to Yale Child Study Center to indicate that her son was having a side effect. Yale Child Study Center never reported to the FDA. As far as we know, she didn't report the side effects to the FDA through MedWatch. But yet, in the aftermath of Sandy Hook, we got massive gun legislation and no legislation regarding psychiatric treatment of children. In fact, we got more of it. And that's
now, why do you
what
think
is,
that is?
Why they got more money for mental health?
No, why do you think that, it's this weird situation, because on one hand, they say, gun control is the thing. Gun control is the thing. And mental health is the thing. And yet they don't want to look or make public the drugs, the mental health drugs that these kids are on. They don't want to make an issue of it. They don't want it to be examined. They suppress the information. What's going on?
There's a lot of money at stake. There's a tremendous amount of money at stake. So if, in my case with Able Child, we sued the state of Connecticut for Adam Lanza's mental health report, all his records and the toxicology report. We did that on behalf of the public because we're a nonprofit. And so the state denied our request. And basically the assistant attorney general basically said, well, if we release this information, a lot of people will stop taking their psychiatric drugs. That was their reason. That's why they did not want to release the information, that people would stop taking the meds.
Wow.
So that was a huge reveal in Sandy Hook. And Sandy Hook, the mental health dollars that followed in the aftermath were in the millions and millions of dollars. So we got more drugging of children. We got more mental health dollars from the federal government without any accountability. They waited a year before they released Adam Lanza's treating psychiatrist name. I fought every day, and I mean every day, with Hartford Courant, the attorney general of the state of Connecticut, and they would not release his name, Paul Fox. So Paul Fox's name was released 1 year to the date of Sandy Hook. By then, all the gun legislation had been passed, and it quickly faded from the public inquiry. And so this is just a pattern of what they do. And when I say they, I'm talking about the state and federal government. It's corrupt. It's no conspiracy, I would say, is to I would say it's about money. It's about mental health grants. If you get a mental health grant for your state, it's very likely it's never going to be audited. So it's like a blank check.
And oh, wow. Then they don't. It's like a slush. It can be used as a slush fund.
Exactly.
Sounds like it could be used,
all the money is unaccounted for. Like Sandy Hook, they came up with this a program. It was like mental health first aid, and millions of dollars went towards it. The program was completely ineffective and really had no science behind it. And then the families sued anybody who would speak out against anything about Sandy Hook, anything. You were lumped in as somebody who was a conspiracy person, or they sued you. You know, my organization constantly went after the toxicology report. So I was pretty focused on, you know, what a family does in the aftermath of the death of their children or their child is really up to them. That doesn't impact our organization. What we want to do is save lives. We believe that getting the toxicology report of these shooters will save lives. Because Whereas the attorney general in the state of Connecticut doesn't want people to go off their meds. Well, if the meds are inducing violence, which according to the FDA they do, because they have a black box suicide warning on them. Suicide is violence to oneself. And then it increases violence towards others, mania. It doesn't happen. I think what the big thing they get away with is that the side effects don't hit everybody the same way. So your product can impact 1% of the population and thus have these rashes of school shootings. You blame the guns, you never have to correct your product, and your product never gets removed from the market. And it's a $1 billion industry. So, you know, it doesn't, if everybody who took a psychiatric drug committed suicide and were murdered children in a school, then obviously we would pull the product immediately. But because it's only a percentage of the
population, the thing is that too is kind of a hidden statistic, because even if it's 1%, you know, if you look at the, I looked at this statistic a few years back, so it might be a little different now. But, you know, 1%, you're talking about 300,000 kids, you know. And that's 300,000 kids who are suicidal and might have homicidal ideation will give you this ongoing epidemic. And it's weird to me because I'm starting to, talking to you, Sheila, I'm starting to get a little paranoid here. I'm starting to think, well, gee, is this working in some way because it creates revenue streams in the mental health arena? And it gives, and the other thing that's scary to me also is that it's starting to, they're starting to talk about taking the mental health decisions for children out of the parents' purview and giving it to, you know, the school mental health people, to the state, to, you know, and that to me is terrifying.
Well, that's definitely happening. That's happening in Connecticut. What really is sad, I've done a lot of work in the state of Connecticut. I do it around the country, but in Connecticut, because I was from Connecticut and I still have a home there, and I was very, very active in Sandy Hook, to see the legislation coming down that they want to put these mental health clinics within the school and take away informed consent is very disturbing. It is. It's, you know, it's devastating to our economy in so many different ways, because we have a population that is just so uneducated. And these schools have become mental health clinics. You know, everything's about emotional stability. And, you know, I'm from the mindset, the more you focus on something, the more you create it. So if the more money you're going to spend on mental health, the more people you're going to find with mental health issues. And so,
yeah.
And because it's so subjective and there's no science behind it, there's no blood test, there's no brain scan, there's no test that you can take that says, okay, you have attention deficit disorder, in which they are allowed to market these drugs because you may have it, is so alarming, you know. So it casts this big net of children, just innocent children, and they're in a captive audience, which is our public school system. And the problem is getting worse. It's not getting better. In the aftermath of Sandy Hook, you know, those parents were flown down to DC and given direct access to all the lawmakers regarding guns. You know, had nothing to do with any kind of accountability in when this boy was treated, what he was treated with. They were not drugs that were FDA approved for use in children. So we have a very drugged nation. We absolutely do. And this latest Texas shooting is just very similar to Sandy Hook, and, you know, a lot of different ways. But the most frightening one is the toxicology and withholding that data. You know, right. Withholding the information is affecting public health. It's affecting public health policy. It's unethical to withhold the toxicology report from the public.
I'm going to ask you kind of a reptilian brain question. Do you think that the pharmaceutical companies go unseen and make sure that their interests are protected?
Oh, 100%. 100%. When I was in Sandy Hook on the ground, they have private security. They had the entire town locked down. And then you have the police department. What people don't realize is that within Sandy Hook, it wasn't only the psychiatric aspect of it, but the police investigation. The police were actually selling drugs out of the police station in Newtown. The FBI investigated it, and it was called Operation Juice Box. And so they were trying to determine what was going on in Newtown after the shooting, and the FBI did an investigation, and they were selling drugs that were coming in from China, and three police officers were indicted and for selling drugs and a long gun, which was found on the scene. I mean, I would say that it's not a conspiracy. What it is good old fashioned corruption. It's corruption in the system that allows these shootings to occur. Even like the one in Texas right now, people don't know how the kid got in the building. Well, then there was the missing keys of the classroom, and it just doesn't, nothing seems to add up, right? And so when you look at this, you say to yourself, what are the odds, you know, that these are Keystone cops? Do they not, they've done drills just like in Sandy Hook, they had all those drills. So my true belief is that it's corruption. It's,
you know, it's interesting that you were talking, go ahead.
No, go ahead. It's people within the system that are playing the system.
There's something really weird going on with Uvalde, though, and you know the door thing is a key question that isn't being answered, because investigative reporter Kelly O'Meara, you know her, I know her, and she just did a show on all the anomalies in the investigation at Uvalde, and she was saying those school doors cannot be locked from the inside, they have to be locked from the outside. That kid got into the classroom. So once inside the classroom, that door was open. It was open. It wasn't locked.
Go ahead.
Well, that's a little strange that these guys were waiting for keys and they were doing this and they were doing that. It's just, there's something very strange. And the law enforcement, of course, they've closed ranks. And anyway, let's take a break here and we'll come back and continue our discussion.
Shannon Joy on TNT Radio.
And Alex Berenson, I think, has the idea. I think he has the right idea as to why this is happening, why the FDA is doing this. And it is because the media propaganda, government officials, Anthony Fauci, they have so traumatized a subset of American parents, woke leftists, people with the Ukraine banner in their profile on Facebook, people with the double masks on or the triple masks, people who have been triple jabbed, double jabbed, cult members, the true believers. They have destroyed their children's lives. They will not let their kids out of their buildings. They haven't seen family and friends for months. These people still exist. Officials are putting pressure on the FDA. They want this for the children so that they can give it to the children because they truly believe it will save them, and then they can have their lives back.
Shannon Joy on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular, we can build that.
For the news and talk you can't hear anywhere else, it's TNT Radio.
I'm back with Sheila Matthews, founder of Able Child, a nationally recognized nonprofit parents' rights organization established in 2003, dedicated to protecting full informed consent and the right to refuse psychiatric services. We're talking about her work, trying to get information on these school shooters, but it specifically the psychiatric drugs they're on and the suppression of that information and what it means, as well as all these this funding going into mental health initiatives that could actually be more hurtful to children than actually than helpful. So Sheila, let's before I move on from talking about kids, I do want to talk about the foster kid situation. You sent me an ABC piece, ABC Network piece that shocked me. I mean, my hair stood on end when I saw that piece. Just talk about it, will you?
Sure. When I went through this with my own son, I was from an affluent town, and I never put my son on drugs, but I went up to testify in Hartford, and I was waiting online, and there was a woman there, and her son was taken by the state of Connecticut, and he was not only drugged, but he was raped in state custody. And I promised her that day, I didn't really know what I was promising, but I'm pretty loyal. So I said, I really wanted to do something about this, and I would not leave her son behind. And so we became really good friends. And so I started to learn a lot about the foster care system. They have no informed consent. The state is the parent. So the state can drug the children with as many psychiatric drugs as they want, with absolutely no accountability. And that's something that really broke my heart.
That's
so
crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy, because basically they have behavioral health is, it used to be, well, that's the term, it's behavioral health. So that's a $1 billion industry. So each state basically hires a behavioral health vendors that oversee a formula that they vote on, and they decide what drugs they'll use for what disorders, again, with no scientific facts behind it, because we have no blood tests. So the foster care children get prescribed several different drugs that are not approved for use in children, and they can experiment different drugs on children in foster care. So it's a human rights violation, and it's still going on. Okay, so when I got involved in it, it just upset me. I couldn't sleep at night, and I was like, I have to do something. So I ended up getting three drugs banned for use in children in the state of Connecticut that was picked up by the New York Times. And they did a story about 396 children, I can remember that number, that they were doing experiments on in foster care. And then I got Paxil, Effexor, and I can't think of the other drug right off top of my head. There was another one. I think it was Celexa, banned for use in children for 6 months in the state of Connecticut. And it kind of rocked the psychiatric world. They were pissed. And then they came in, the manufacturers from Canada came in and met with behind closed doors with the governor and got the formula reinstated. So the ban did not last but 6 months. But then they got it reinstated. So then I went, I wanted to visit this psychiatric facility in Connecticut called Riverview. And I went in there I called and I said, listen, I'm a nonprofit. I want to come in. I want to, take a tour of the facility and look at and meet some of the kids. And so they were a little reluctant, but I went. And I was shocked. It was a it was disgusting, the facility. It just really, it really was. And I remember waiting in the office and this guy came in and he said he was from the Department of Pharmacological, they were in charge of the pharmacy there. And I said, well, do you happen to have a list of the drugs, how many drugs and what you're spending on the psych drugs? And he gave it to me, which I think he made a huge mistake. He gave me the report and I gave it to Diane Sawyer. And Diane Sawyer used it in her 1 year investigative report of the drugging of foster care kids. And what they do with these psychiatric facilities is once they're exposed, any corruption or somebody like my organization that went in and toured, and then I gave Diane Sawyer the info, they changed the name of the facilities. So that's how they reform it. So that's what they ended up doing, changing the name of the Riverview Psychiatric Facility. But I did a lot of work in foster care that way. It's still such a nightmare in each state in the United States. We probably spend so much money on psychiatric services. And by the time the children are so damaged by the time they turn 18, that it kind of fuels the homeless population, you know? Yeah. So they don't get cured. They just are just cradled. You know, the drug companies put it this way. When I was online testifying, I met an actual rep of a drug company and he was an older man. He was really pretty nice. And I said, I'm here to testify regarding the psychiatric drugs in the Sandy Hook shooting. And he said, well, you're never going to get the toxicology because it's cradle to grave. And I was so shocked he said that to me. But really what he meant is that the pharmaceutical companies will, the right to privacy is from the cradle to the grave. They're not giving out any information. They're not.
Now, why is it that they have the right to do that? Because from what I understand, dead people don't have rights anymore because they're dead.
Well, you would think that. And you would also think if they murdered and they're accused of murdering 18, 20 people at a clip, why would we care about their privacy? And the fact of the matter is that the pharmaceutical companies run the United States. They do. They have. They're the most powerful. They are more powerful from the gun company. Like the guns are nothing in comparison to the pharmaceutical companies. And the legislation, they're writing the legislation in each state. There's what I found out was there was a behavioral health committee that operates outside of the legislative process that reports directly to the governor of each state. And they do recommendations of legislation. So they write the legislation and then they send it to the governor's office. And this is going to be your budget and this is what we're going to spend it on. So they operate outside of the legislative process. And then they
and
get
where do the members come from? Where do the members of these committees come from?
From the pharmaceutical industries, from the behavioral health industry. I mean, behavioral health is a huge industry. It's huge. And they really, it's a revolving door through the FDA advisory panel and the drug companies and the behavioral health vendors. And another huge part in this is the law firms. The law firms that usually represent the pharmaceutical companies, there's one called, I can't think of the name, right? They're the largest pharmaceutical drug law firm And they actually remodeled the foster care system in the state of Connecticut. I wrote an article on that called Billion Dollar Industry. The World Health Organization saw my article. They went on my website. They were shook by that. It's very hard to find on the internet now, but really what there was this children's rights nonprofit in the state of Connecticut. And what they did was they sued the state and said the children in foster care were not getting appropriate mental health care. Well, their biggest client was the pharmaceutical industry. So they reorganized all of the Department of the Children and Family Services in the state of Connecticut.
And what were the key reorganization elements, and how did they change things?
They wanted children to be evaluated by a psychiatrist and diagnosed. So they wanted more mental health diagnosing, and then they would then get referrals to the psychiatric vendor and then placed on the pharmaceutical drugs. So it's like, it's literally the way our school systems are set up, as well as foster care. It is a distribution pipeline to the pharmaceutical companies.
So basically they arranged it so that more kids would be put on drugs. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Their lawsuit was based on the fact that they didn't feel that the children were getting proper mental health services. So they sued the state. There was a landmark case, and then this nonprofit, which is really the front group for the pharmaceutical companies.
They got to
pipe the whole DCF, Department of Children and Family Services. So guess whose product gets in there? It's children in foster care, you know, aren't getting eye doctor's appointments and dentist appointments and dietitians. Those services are very rare for children in DCF, Department of Children and Family Services. As a matter of fact, that Riverview psychiatric facility that I went to view, they had a little dentist office, and what they used to do was pull all the children's teeth so they didn't have to do dental work on them. It was disgusting.
Much
human rights abuse. I can't even, it breaks my heart to this day.
I mean, I was watching that video, and these kids, this first of all, they had, these kids were saying, I'm on this drug and this drug and this drug. I'm on 13 drugs. And another kid was saying, you know, I feel I'm on this drug, this or that, and they make me feel like I have a bunch of bricks on top of my head, he said. Ooh. And then, you know, these two, and she gave some other examples, and then two of the kids, they showed the kids coming off of those drugs, and it was so heartbreaking. I mean, it was like their brain was in pain or something. They were just nuts, just running around and screaming, and you know, and after they were taken off the drugs, they were adopted, and one of the, you know, the one kid is like an honor student and the other kid is fine. I mean, it's just, I can't, it's criminal, and I don't understand why somebody has to go into those foster homes and look at this criminality. And I'll tell you something, the thing that I don't understand is there's sort of a normalization now. It's normal to take antidepressant drugs. It's normal. Like, a lot of, you know, parents, I'm sure, a lot of parents are thinking, oh, it's okay for my kid to be put on this stuff. I'm on something, you know. And these kids, their little brains are developing. And it's, I don't know, Sheila, you tell me. How is this going to ever change?
Well, I think it changes by you doing shows like this. I think that it's a process of human development. Like when you look at some of the products that have been pulled off the market, like Fen-Phen, that diet drug that people were dying from, you know, we need a good cleaning up of the politicians on both sides of the aisle and our systems. Like our institutions are good, like the MedWatch program or VARS. Those are great reporting systems, but they're only as great as the data that they get, right? So one of my passions is to make sure that people know what MedWatch is. You know, when I did our survey, there's only 1% of the population that even knows that MedWatch exists, right?
So, well, tell the audience what MedWatch is so that they know, and VAERS also. Explain VAERS to them, too.
Sure. MedWatch is a program that is voluntary. So if you have a side effect, not only from a psychiatric drug, but any drug, you can report it directly to the FDA through 1-800-MEDWATCH, or you could go on MedWatch and download a form and you fill it out. And what that does is it's supposed to regulate the drug companies. But if the FDA isn't getting the reports, then they can't take those reports and regulate the drug companies. So I liken MedWatch to kryptonite. I believe it is the Superman that we're really looking for, because if everybody knew about MedWatch, and MedWatch was mandatory when you advertise a drug, because here in the United States, there's drug commercials every other minute, right?
So yeah. The preponderance of ads on TV are pharmaceutical ads. That's how you know who's large and in charge in this country.
Right. And there's some, you know, there are some life-saving drugs. I think that the other thing you have to say is, well, we can't just, I'm never, you know, Able Child's never going to, I've been working on this 20 years. We're never going to put them out of business, nor do we want to, because there's some life-saving drugs. But we want.
Yeah, but the whole, everything was fine until they were allowed to advertise on TV. Because before, remember, pharmaceutical industry was not allowed to promote its drugs on television. Okay?
That's right.
And now they are. And that completely changed things. It completely changed things.
That's a game changer. That's a game changer.
Big game changer.
Yes. So what we need to do, I mean, when I think of solutions, I think of MedWatch, and I think of VARS, which is regarding vaccinations. It's the same type of system, but it's for vaccinations. So we have a crisis.
VAERS is a vaccine adverse events reporting system, right?
That's right. So it's two separate systems, but they're relatively operate in the same way. It's to report any, look, you want this for public safety. You want to be able to report side effects, because guess what? You know, if there's a rash of suicides in a cluster like there was once in Pennsylvania that I reported on at a school, you want to know that, oh my gosh, we need to get that drug off the shelf, force the drug companies either to reformulate it. You know, look, psychiatric drugs are, they're lifestyle drugs. There's just no way about it that there's any science about it. There isn't.
Right.
You know, it's different from like a diabetes drug where you can verify somebody has this. Here's the thing though. We want drug safety. Okay. That's what we want, drug safety. In order to achieve that, we have to educate the population. not only here in
the United
States.
The other thing is, though, is the FDA. The FDA does not play its role properly either. Let's be clear about that, right? I mean, right. The way that the FDA okays a drug or approves a drug is, you know, they say, oh, it's FDA approved, oh, clinical trials and this and that, but they can have as many clinical trials as they want, and they can have 25 that show the drug is a total failure. As long as they have two that show a little bit of something, then it can be approved. So that's a whole show in itself too, looking at the FDA and how they approve drugs, particularly drugs for mental health, because as you say, I mean, there's no physical symptom involved in this. You know, they always say, they always try and say, oh, you have a low serotonin level or something, and this ups your serotonin level. So they act as if there's a chemical problem with the brain, but that's never, ever been shown either, has it?
No, and there's this guy named Donnie Deutsch, and I can't say his name enough, Donnie Deutsch. He was the marketing genius behind the Zoloft commercial, where it was a little bouncing egg and it said, you may suffer from a chemical imbalance. And that little word may was what was the defining moment for antidepressants and Zoloft, and it skyrocketed and everybody was taking it, men, women, children, everybody's on it. You know, and here's the thing. It's fraud when you do that. In my thought process is when you represent something as it's not, you know, it's not a cure. It's not going to balance any chemicals out. It says it may. Well, that doesn't sound like science to me. It may rain today.
Yeah. Well, not. Well, not only that, when you say it may, that means it, you know, it may not. Okay, so that's right. Okay. But it doesn't really tell you what it does in the sense that it ups your serotonin levels. But then what are the consequences of upping your serotonin levels for your health, for your brain, for your chemistry? You know, what all that is just sort of. It's just sort of covered over with a, you know, a white blanket or something. And it's just not considered. It's like, oh, it's going to up my serotonin level. Oh, that sounds good, you know. And
go ahead.
Well, and, you know, people take these drugs and then they can't get off them.
Hmm.
Now, I mean, they're dangerous to get off. They're dangerous to get off. I mean, getting off of these drugs is you can't just stop taking those pills. There's a major withdrawal process, which is very dangerous.
That's right. And that's why the state of Connecticut said, well, we're afraid everybody's going to go off their meds. Well, I guess maybe you should educate the public how to get off of them safely. You know, with blood work. And, you know, I know, you know, my brother-in-law was on antidepressants and killed himself. And basically the treating psychiatrist didn't take him off the drug properly. But they walk away. These psychiatrists are never held to account. And the other really bad thing about behavioral health drugs and the whole mental health industry is, well, guess what? If you kill yourself, they're going to say you were mentally ill. They're not going to say that the drugs actually caused that, you know? Right. So you're signing yourself up. When you get diagnosed, you're basically, you know, saying, you know, giving a label to yourself, and they're going to use that label to deflect any sort of accountability, you know.
I mean,
I was going to say the other thing is, then they have these anti-stigma campaigns, you know. Oh, well, you know, oh, you don't want to be treated because it's stigmatizing. So they had it all set up, you know.
They had it wrapped up six ways to Sunday. Yeah, we'll be right back with Sheila Matthews.